Hare Krishna, this is Anadhar Swami.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hi, Bo. I mean, nice to see you yesterday. Sorry I couldn't spend more time. It was so hectic. But you have the verse by any chance?
No, I left my notes at home. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's right. You're still in town, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm having a little technical difficulty. Just one second here. Anyway, greetings from New York. You know, I went to the Rath Yatra yesterday in New York. And, of course, the best thing about it is just to feel the glory of Prabhupada and see how much he spread the holy name. And each year more and more people are coming, and that's really amazing. And just to sit in front of Jagannath's cart and hear Agni Dev's kirtan, and just imagining the immense benefit from you know, the holy name resounding in New York. I can't imagine how much blessings the city of New York gets by Lord Jagannath going down Fifth Avenue and everyone hearing all those the kirtan and Prabhupada's 50th anniversary and how much he accomplished. I just saw pictures of the Prime Minister of Britain. I saw a little video of the Prime Minister of Britain inaugurating, they're building a new building there. Prime Minister of Britain, David Cameron, you know, garlanding Prabhupada, seeing the deities, meeting Radhanath Swami, Shivaram Swami, Bhakti Charuth, and all those, and just see how, by Prabhupada's grace, how many things are happening and how many people have benefited. And, of course, I know so many people in the park, and that becomes a little difficult because every conversation you have, you know, they call it interrupted, but another person comes and it's just, you know, I think sometimes just hiding in the kirtan, which, could be nice, but then I think of all the people that I haven't seen for so many years and to link with them. I think maybe that's a reason why it's not really a festival that so many sannyasis visit anymore. It's just probably too overwhelming. But really blissful. And that kirtan, wow. Harinam Ashram and Madhav and those guys, and amazing. Okay, I'm booted up now. Let's get to where we are in the Bhagavatam. Probably, I think we're at somewhere, yeah, I got it. It was somewhere in the story of Bhishma Dev. I think I may have missed the class last week because being in Colombia. Just an interesting thing I'll share you with you. I was with Pradyumna, and Pradyumna Prabhu, he was telling me all the different books that Prabhupada brought to America. And he was just describing, he brought the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He brought an introduction to Indian philosophy by Chatterjee and Dutt. He brought the CC. He brought his Bhagavatams. He brought an eighth commentaries of the Bhagavatam that was really old. It was like from 1902 or something. And he had the eight commentaries, and he was working. And then Pradyumna found in the library, I think in Columbia University, this one by Dr. Shankar Shastri, a 12 commentary book that was, you know, maybe printed in this 1960 or something, or no earlier than that. Then Prabhupada used that. And then he said Ravindra Shuprabhu, because he had a, studying at Penn, he was able to go in the library and get a copy of Prabhupada or something like that. And then that person came to Prabhupada himself and on the body gave him a gift. And that Prabhupada had the Mahabharata. He brought a many volumes, thick volumes of the Mahabharata, and then Pradyumna said in the, actually in this chapter, when all the great personalities come to see, when all the great personalities come to see, you know, Parvat Muni, when they come and assemble on the battlefield, and then there's a little biography of each, Pradyumna said he looked in all the commentaries and couldn't find out where Prabhupada got that. But then when he looked at Prabhupada's book, Prabhupada had a little encyclopedia of Indian personalities, and Prabhupada practically copied it word for word from that little book he brought of the biography. So Prabhupada's purports are quite unique. I'm really a little bit at a loss where I'm at, but okay, I'm just going to start at one place. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, Text 29. The time now is 9:11, which it's just interesting because in Colombia, one of our people is getting married on 9/11. I guess it doesn't mean anything there, but I was like wondering about the date. You know, you have to get married on 9/11. I remember in Vrindavan, don't mind me, I got to get in the mood. The Rathi Yatra is exhausting, so I may be rapping a little bit here. But I remember in Vrindavan, when I was, you know, right in the middle of whatever controversy and whatever difficulties, intensity of life affords you in that particular time, it seemed to be more for me. But I finally got a phone. At that time, there's no cell phones, and you had to apply to get an ordinary phone. It was such like a luxury to have a phone. Otherwise, we didn't have phones. You know, you'd have to meet people or see people and make appointments. And somehow my phone number was 9/11. And when Boy John heard that, he said, wow, he said, your life's a disaster. My phone number in Vrindavan was 9/11. Like at the wedding there was 9/11. So the time was 9/11. And you can read on my, and I'll get to the Bhagavatam, give me some time here. You'll read on my reading on the, I had something to say there. We'll get into the verse. I kind of forgot it, but it was humorous. Okay, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, Text 29. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Dharmam pavaditastasya sakala pratyupastita yoginas chanjamityur vanchitas tutarayana. And Bhishma Dev was describing occupational duties. The sun's course ran into the northern hemisphere. This period is desired by mystics who die at their own will. The perfect yogis or mystics can leave the material body at their own sweet will at a suitable time and go to a suitable planet desired by them. In the Bhagavad Gita 8:24, it is said that self-realized souls who have exactly identified themselves with the interest of the Supreme Lord can leave the material body during the time of the fire god's effulgence and when the sun is in the northern horizon and thus achieve the transcendental sky. In the Vedas, these times are considered auspicious for quitting the body, and they are taken advantage of by the expert mystics who perfected the system. Perfection of yoga means attainment of such supernatural states as to be able to leave the material body as desired. Yogis can also reach any planet within no time without a material vehicle. The yogis can reach the highest planetary system within a very short time, and this is impossible for the materialists. Even attempting to reach the highest planet will take millions of years at a speed of millions of miles per hour. This is a different science. And Bhishmadev knew well how to utilize it. He was just waiting for the suitable moment to quit his material body. And the golden opportunity arrived when he was instructing his noble grandsons, the Pandavas. He thus prepared himself to quit his body before the exalted Lord Sri Krishna, the pious Pandavas, and the great sages headed by Bhagavan Vyas and all great souls. Om Jnana Timanandasya Jnanam Jana Shalakaya Taksur Mulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So, we're at the part where we're just following Krishna in the story of, in the explanation by the sages of Naimisharanya about Maharaj Prickett. Krishna appears at his birth. And we're focused on Krishna and his relationship with the devotees, which is one of the main ways in which we develop bhakti in our hearts. Prabhupada said that we advance by appreciation. So when we appreciate something, the same thing that we desire, we have to have that desire. So if you appreciate a wealthy man, then you have to have a desire for wealth. If you appreciate a successful movie star, you may have to have the desire to be talented or to have a promiscuous sex life. And if you appreciate devotees, then you have to have a desire for devotional service. And by that appreciation, it will increase, especially in devotional service, because when you see that which you are appreciating, and you see the glory of what you're appreciating, you see the beauty of it, you see the beauty of how the devotees are sacrificing and surrendering their lives for Krishna, then that becomes a very, very attractive thing to you. So the Bhagavatam is about Krishna and his devotees, and you can't separate Krishna from his devotees, because Krishna is Akila Rasa Mrita Murti. He's the full embodiment of love, and love means a relationship. So Krishna means a lover, and a lover means there must be, someone in that relationship. And Krishna means a child, so there must be a parent. Krishna means a friend, there must be a friend. So Krishna means God with his devotees, intimate devotees, and manifest fully. And by hearing about them, we really start to aspire. In one sense, that's what Radha Anuga is. Anuga means to follow the rag of the ragatmakas, those who have that type of love within their hearts. And then you develop an appreciation to have that same love. That's how we get Raga Nuga Bhakti. That's how we cultivate Raga Nuga Bhakti. We hear the Bhagavatam. And by hearing the Bhagavatam, we develop a desire to have that type of love. And then by hearing about that type of love, then we ourselves begin to desire it. And we're especially seeing that love as Krishna is leaving and the intense feelings of separation are being invoked within those devotees who Krishna is their life. Without Krishna, they have no life. And that's the perfection. That's the, I don't know what you call it, the existential reality is this intense love, which is a very reasonable conception of reality, of the ultimate reality based on our experience here, because we see there is a pleasure potency and that pleasure is love. So our conception of perfection is overwhelming love. And what's ever reflected here is a reflection of that love of God, that love of reality, real love. God is the ultimate object of love because he's real. He's artha. He's real. And therefore he's eternal. And that's who we actually are. And to have that in full is the perfection of life. And therefore, the Upanishads describe the ultimate reality sometimes as Rasa Vaisaha. He is that ultimate love. So now we've been following the story of Bhishma Dev, and Krishna is there, as it are all the great personalities of his time. And we see the qualities of Bhishma Dev, who is one of the Mahajans, one of the spiritual authorities, and we see the level of his realization is that his ability to express them is not compromised by his difficult material situation. Lying on a bed of arrows must be quite disturbing. But that kind of love and that kind of realization is not mentally constructed. When something is mentally constructed, it can be disturbed when the mind is disturbed. But when something is actually part of your bhava, part of your nature, then it doesn't get affected by the mind. If someone is really lusty or envious, you know, you can imagine someone's really envious of someone and he has a toothache, he's still really envious of someone. If someone really is infatuated with someone and he has a, he's still, because it's coming from, it's not coming just from the mind, it's coming from the heart. It's a bhava. So Bhishma Dev's love for Krishna is his state. It's above ashakti, where it's just flowing so addictively and intensely and all-consumingly that you can't forget it. I was in the garden with Prabhupada in Dallas, and we're reading Krishna book every night, and we're reading the part about the gopis criticizing Krishna. And Prabhupada was laughing and laughing and laughing. He said, you see, they're criticizing Krishna, but they can't stop thinking of Krishna. Even they're saying the most worst things about him. They're so angry with him. And they can't stop. They can't stop thinking of Krishna. So we're going to see this, you know, Bhishma Dev, and Krishna's glorifying him. that this kind of knowledge and this kind of realization comes from a very, very deeper platform. Even though Prabhupada played the part of an ordinary person as he came into Vrindavan for the last time, and I was at the door greeting him, and it said, Krishna Tvadiya Parapankaja Pankarajam Ajeva Me Vishatume Manasa. And let me die now when the swan of my mind is entangled below his feet. Otherwise, at the time of death, when I'm choked up with mucus, bile, and how will I remember you? That's humble. For us, that's what it means. We won't be able to remember Krishna. That's why in the Bhagavad Gita it says, Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tajantyante kalevaram tam tamevaiti kontayatsa data bhava bhavata. Whatever you're thinking at the time of death, of that nature you'll go. But it's not just the thoughts. It's the thoughts that are based on where your heart is, where your condition, where your bhava is. That's where you'll go, because you won't be able to remember at the time of death, but the condition of love and devotion won't be affected. And I told you, I have one friend who's very advanced in spiritual life, and is chanting as he's getting more and more ill and more in pain, his bhajan increases. Because it's not just coming from the mind, which is disturbed by sickness. It's coming deeply from the heart, which is unaffected by the changes of the mind. I remember one sadhu told Satyananda Swami, are you chanting the mantra? The mantra is chanting you. So here we see with Bhishma Dev, he's able to instruct first Yudhisthira on deep spiritual topics, and then Yudhisthira again on the duties of the king, and everyone's seeing what is the nature of someone who has real devotion. They cannot forget Krishna. Because it's not just memory, it's heart. So here, as Bhishma Dev is describing the occupational duties, dharma, and explaining it, then the sun comes at a particular time with a mystic's desire. And there's different ways to go back to Godhead, and there's different combinations of them. One is a more indirect process. It's described in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, how one can indirectly ascend, how one can indirectly descend to the spiritual world, going through the different planetary systems, and elevating oneself, not mechanically, but by the system of increasingly giving up material desires, which automatically bring you to the next sphere of existence. And someone goes through all that as an indirect process. And here also, the mystics knew how, I guess it's combined here with their devotion, they knew how to take advantage of the mechanics of the world to facilitate their ascent. And they can do it in a short time. They take advantage of auspicious tides. And now he wants to leave because the most auspicious time is when Krishna is there or the devotees are there. And when the devotees are there, Krishna is there. Because real devotees mean they're manifesting Krishna. So But anyway, Krishna's there personally. And he's able to leave at will. And this is actually considered a blessing. Sometimes people get horrible diseases like cancer. On one platform, it's a great tragedy, but on other platforms, sometimes they say, well, why, you know, so many devotees getting cancer, even great devotees getting cancer? Well, here's something I just thought about today, although I don't wish it on anyone, but maybe it is a blessing. Because maybe it's the way that Krishna allows the devotee to die while living. And I know my father, he died on his 80th birthday. He was bowling with my mother, and he picked up the ball, and then he keeled over and he died. So in one sense, that was considered a great blessing that he died doing what he liked. But is not the greater blessing on the platform of the soul is when you are told, this is, you know, that you, that I'm taking you. And if we have time to prepare, and even though there's difficulty and pain, again, which I don't wish on anyone, you have a chance to fix up your consciousness or go to Vrindavan or be in the association of devotees like Mother Perini. Anyway, that's a thought. Because some people say, oh, why did so many devotees get cancer? So many senior devotees die that way. Well, maybe this is the blessing of God. And Bijam is getting that blessing. And let's see how he, and this is one of my favorite verses coming up, and I'm honored to be able to speak about it. Tado prasamritya gira sahasvane vimukta shangam mana adi purushe krishne vasat Pita pate chatur bhuje purastite milita drig yadarayat. Thereupon, that man who spoke on different subjects with thousands of meanings and who fought on thousands of battlefields and protected thousands of men stopped speaking and, being completely free from all bondage, withdrew his mind from everything else and fixed his wide open eyes upon the original personality of Godhead, who stood before him four-handed, dressed in yellow garments that glittered and shined. What can be greater? I mean, this is love. This is love. This is such real, 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 real love. And at the moment of death, God, Kusmin Parama Prema Rup, it's the highest form of love. Even though it's death, there's this absorption out of love. And this is the example of verse that's given in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's the thing that's given to describe prema. Of course, the quality of prema, what we can call prema bhakti samadhi, because samadhi means that the focus is so great that there's no cognizance outside of your focus. You're not even aware. Therefore, sometimes laughing, chanting, you become aware. You're so focused. So this is the focus of a person who was engaged in the world in so many ways, who spoke on so many subjects and thousands of meetings and fought thousands of battlefields, thousands of men, so he's engaged in thousands and thousands and thousands of ways, and then he's able to withdraw his mind. and fix it on the lotus feet. And fix it on the lotus feet of Krishna. Purport, in the momentous hour of leaving his material body, Bhishmadev set the glorious example concerning the important function of human form of life. The subject matter which attracts the dying man becomes the beginning of his next life. He died in praying, focused on his beloved. Completely, I mean, this is really perfection of yoga. He's focused on the object of meditation. And other thoughts he's not following at all. So somehow or other, this is Prabhupada's prayer. Let me die now. And the swan of my mind is focused. And I may become distracted, but Bhishmadev doesn't become distracted. Even though he fought on thousands of battles, thousands of men, thousands of meetings, thousands of subjects. He's able to fix his mind. And the gross body is a product of the subtle body. So this is actually, you know, probably in the quote from the 8th chapter of the Gita, because this is such an important subject, the moment of death. Because it's probably the most important time in your life is the moment of death, because it determines your next destination. I always said that when a friend of mine shocked me, he said, the Sanskrit scholar, he said, you know what you'll think at the time of death, when your mind is so disturbed, when you don't have control over your thoughts, it's what you're dreaming now. Because dreams means thoughts without control. And death means thoughts without control. You'll be left only with your Baba. And if the Baba connects to the subject matter of God, then the destination is so auspicious. Suchinam, Shrimatam Gehe, Yoga Brashta Vijayate, even a fallen yogi. He's not complete, but he gets to take birth in an aristocratic or brahminical family, which will enable him to pursue his spiritual life without any distraction. Purport, in the momentous hour of leaving his material body, Bhishmadev set the glorious example concerning, okay, read that. Therefore, if one is absorbed in thoughts of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, he's sure to go back home, back to God, without any doubt. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 8, 5 to 15. So this 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there were just, I think, many, many questions asked at the end of the 7th chapter or something, and big questions. But it's interesting because it's the bhakti section of the Gita, and there's a whole diversion just to this subject of death, this junction. Just think, this concept of false ego as a funnel that delimits consciousness to identify with a particular body, whether it's delimits it to the body of an elephant or delimits to the body of an ant, then you think you're the body, and we think we're the body. So at the end of life, we have so many thoughts, even in this life, so many selfish thoughts and from previous lives. And then God makes the call. What is the best experience for you to move closest to God? And unfortunately, people are offensive. The best situation for them is to be completely bereft of association of devotees. Completely bereft. So God decides. That's what karma is. karma is the conditions to teach you the lessons you need that God has seen from observing you in your life. And then there's certain conditions we need. And to me, it's a proof of God because, at least in my own life, because I see that the conditions that I'm put in are so directed to the subtleties of my material conditioning that that synchronicity between what happens to me and who I am is implausible, impossible by chance. There's some force way beyond us that's directing the world. And actually, all Indian philosophies, whether they're Gnostic or what is it? Astic or Gnostic, whether they're theist or atheist, they all believe there's this force. There's a force. And we can see it in our life. If we're on a sincere path of spiritual advancement, if we're on a sincere path of spiritual advancement, that's our goal, then it becomes, then we understand those things. We understand the lessons. And we understand the lessons means we understand the connection between what happens to us and who we are. And it's such a phenomenal improbability that the world can just move that way randomly, that it's one of the most powerful affirmations that there's God. So let's read these very, very important verses about attaining the supreme at the end of life. 5, and whoever at the time of death quits his body remembering me alone at once attains my nature, of this there is no doubt. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. Therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna, and at the same time carrying out your prescribed duty of fighting. With your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain me without doubt. He who meditates, 8, on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his mind completely engaged in remembering me, undeviated from the path, he, O Partha Arjuna, is sure to reach. One should meditate upon the Supreme Person as the one who knows everything, as he who is the oldest, who is the controller, who is smaller than the smallest, who is the maintainer of everything, who is beyond all material conception, who is inconceivable, who is always a person. He is luminous like the sun, and being transcendental is beyond the material nature. 10. One who, at the time of death, fixes his life air between the eyebrows and in full devotion engages himself in remembering the Supreme Lord, will certainly attain to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. 11. Persons learned in the Vedas who utter Omkara and who are great sages in the renounced order enter into Brahman. Desiring such perfection, one practices celibacy. I shall now explain to you this process by which one may attain salvation. 12. The yogic situation is that of detachment from all sensual engagements. Closing all the doors of the senses and fixing the mind on the heart and the life airs on the top of the head, one establishes himself in yoga. 13. After being situated in this yoga practice and vibrating the sacred syllable Om, the supreme combination of letters, if one thinks of the Supreme Personality of God and quits his body, he will certainly reach the spiritual planets. 14. One who remembers me without deviation, I am easy to attain, O son of Pritha, because of his constant engagement in devotional service. 15. After attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they've attained the highest perfection. Now the purport again. Sri Bhishmadeva attained the perfection of quitting his body at will and was fortunate enough to have Lord Krishna, the object of his attention, personally be present at the time of death. He therefore fixed his open eyes upon him. He wanted to see Sri Krishna for a long time out of his spontaneous love for him. Because he was a pure devotee, he had very little to do with the detailed performance of yogic principles. Simply bhakti yoga is enough to bring about perfection. Therefore, the ardent desire of Bhishmadeva was to see the person of Lord Krishna, the most lovable object, and by the grace of the Lord, Bhishmadeva had this opportunity at the last stage of his breathing. Are there any questions? Okay, anybody like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Gail. This was another one of those winners. There were so many things I wanted to just write and keep down, keep in memory.
Really?
So thank you so much. It was like, this was such a great one, such a great one. Thank you so much.
Wow. Wow, Gail, it never fails that every time I think I blew it, you think it's the greatest class. But
I knew
it's so encouraging. Yeah. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Maharaj, I'd like to make a comment.
Yeah, Henry, yes.
That you know, so first of all, that was a wonderful class. Thank you so much. I was listening in the cab on the way to the airport. But, you know, yesterday, that kirtan, the kirtan that's usually at Union Square, and, you know, it was so powerful. You know, I really now understand why you've been glorifying that kirtan group and the power of that kirtan. It went so deeply into my heart. I feel like I just, you know, it really helped move me to a whole new level of Krishna consciousness.
Wow. Wow, Henry, wow, that's where you were, huh? Great. It was fantastic, wasn't it? Yeah, that mantra is something,
absolutely.
And it was just, wow. I mean, it was amazing. Now I kind of regret a little bit that I got so caught in the park by different people who wanted to talk to me and whatever, you know, and it just happens to be that way. Yeah, that's where it was at. Boy, that kirtan was really rocking. Wow. Yeah. Great. Thanks, Henry. That's I was thinking next year maybe I ain't going to go to Rathayatra, but I'll go, but I'll just sit by that kirtan. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Hi, Malati.
This is who?
Malati.
Malati. Hare Krishna. How are you feeling? Tired?
I'm feeling really well, thank you. Not as tired as I expected to be, but more tired than usual, yes. I can't complain.
Okay.
She's great.
Okay, wonderful. That's so blissful. Wonderful, thank you. Henry, I don't know if you know that Malati had a child. What's your daughter's name, Malati?
Isabel Celeste.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, all our blessings to her. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hi, Krishna Gumaraj. This is Kishori.
Hi, this is Priya.
Priya, thank you for listening to that. That's really great. Okay, good. And we'll see you all next Saturday. That's great. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. You can hear Priya.
This is Chaitanya Priya? Okay,
yes,
thank you. So regular. Great.
Thank you for the steadiness that you are developing in me. The class has always been the most important part for me.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I know you're on there every week and twice. That's great. A few other people say hello today.
Hare Krishna Bhagavan.
Yeah, I briefly saw you yesterday, but there were so many people. I saw your son. I saw your son. He came and said hello to me.
Yeah, he told me.
Your handsome son.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Anybody else say hello?
Are you doing the Bhakti Center today, Maharaj?
I am. I'm going to come to Garanga's class.
Oh, he's doing it. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Anybody else say hello? Okay, we'll just end it today. That should probably be the